Welcome to this episode of Drivers, Morning Reed's inside look into the current conditions and future directions of the golf industry. I'm David Klein with Sports and Leisure Research Group, and today we're going to have a really great episode for you. You know, when it comes to bucket list events, the words Pebble Beach often come to mind. For the past 10 years, Steve John has seen some fascinating trends at one of the world's most iconic courses, and we're lucky enough to have him with us today. So let's tee it up with John Last, Sports and Leisure Research Group's president and founder. John, take it away.
Thanks, David. It's great to be here, and it's great to welcome Steve John, whose official capacity as CEO of the Monterey Peninsula Foundation includes being tournament director of the AT&T Pebble Beach Golf Classic, an event that I can remember going back to when I was a kid watching as the Bing Crosby clam bake that everybody seemed to see all the celebrities and stars come out. And sounds like an absolute dream job. Steve, tell us a little bit about your professional background and how you came into overseeing one of the most celebrated events on tour.
Yeah, it is. Thanks for having me, guys. It is a dream job. I actually played in the tournament 9 times, starting in 1994 and playing all the way up until 2010. And took my current position in the fall of 2011. But now that I'm running it, I don't know why in the world they invited me. I look back and I think, God, we don't have spots for some people. And I don't know. I'm just thankful that I was invited. I made the cut once, which is, that's the deal as an amateur. You want to make the cut. You want that umbrella. And I have the umbrella to prove it. The rest of the time, I played horrible. I was never close. My professional partners probably thought I was a total chop. But I had a great time. My dad played in it a couple years as well, starting in 83. So I've got a long history with coming to Pebble Beach. I'm from Michigan originally in the car business. And I was a car dealer for 25 years up in Santa Cruz, Chevrolets and Hondas. And I was really big into philanthropy, love golf. And I think it was a natural fit when they approached me for this job in 11. I felt very comfortable in the environment of giving back and playing golf. I've never run a golf tournament. I made a joke the first year when somebody asked me, how do you get this? I don't know. I've run marathons and played in golf tournaments. I've had the runs, but I've never run a golf tournament. So I guess I'm going to figure out in a hurry how to do it. And it comes down to volunteers. If you have dedicated, committed volunteers, which the AT&T does, it makes it a lot easier. That coupled with an amazing staff and the Monterey Peninsula Foundation staff is incredible, highly committed. They all understand the role and responsibility within the tournament, and it's all about giving back. So yes, I do have a dream job, and I'm very thankful and appreciative of it, and look forward to the event, AT&T, and then also we run the Pure Insurance Championship event in the fall. But that's my background. It's not that exciting, but it's one story.
It's absolutely a super path to a very vaunted place. Yeah, we're coming up on this year's event, February 8th to 14th, which happens to be the 75th anniversary of the tournament. And I guess the first time, unfortunately, that there won't be spectators or amateurs on site, which is obviously a reflection of the times that we're in right now. Beyond that, or even incorporating that, what are some of the more significant challenges that you and your team are navigating around for this year's event? I'm sure, you know, like we all say, it's an event like no other.
Yeah, what a year to celebrate 75, huh?
Yeah.
No spectators. We announced that a couple weeks ago. We announced, it seems like last week, I guess it was week before, no amateurs, which is, you know, that's Bing Crosby brought it to Pebble Beach. He brought his buddies from Hollywood to play with their friends from the PGA Tour. And it's been a beautiful mix for 75 years. And to not have that is difficult. We're thrilled to have a tournament. It's a professional, it's now, I guess it's going to be called the AT&T Pebble Beach. We're not changing the name, but I don't know what it can't be called, the Pro-Am. But it's tough because that's the history. That's the rich history and heritage of this tournament. You bring these guys from Hollywood and gals from all walks of life, CEOs, and put them in a field when it counts, and they all, most of them crumble. It's interesting to see people that are titans of the industry and leaders in every aspect of walks of life. They've been successful in everything they've ever done, and they get on the first tee and shake like a leaf at Pebble Beach. So it won't be the same. We'll have 156 pros playing Pebble Beach and Spyglass, two golf courses versus three, and then we'll cut to 65 in ties for the weekend. So we have a different challenge. We will not have a build whatsoever on the golf course. The golf course will look like it does today at Pebble Beach, other than AT&T will have some tee back signs and some tee side signs. And some, you know, they'll have towers will be there for the cameras and things like that, but it won't have the typical look of the sky suite structures on 17 and 18. So in that regard, very, very different. You know, the COVID brings a whole other element. Even if, let's just say we had amateurs, we had spectators, then you have COVID. There's another layer. We don't have any spectators or amateurs, but we still have COVID. And that's a big challenge, the testing. Fortunately, the PGA Tour is very good at what they do. They were the first to come back to sports, and they've done it successfully. They've run 26 tournaments, 27 now. We do run the peer insurance in the fall. That was under COVID circumstances, so we had the testing protocol in place. We did it successfully alongside with the PGA Tour champions. But it just adds, I say, it's another layer. So we're testing all the players before they get on site. We're temperature testing every day. If anybody has any COVID symptoms, they're retested. And then obviously quarantined and everything else that we're all overly, unfortunately, very familiar with because of what's happened. So that's another layer, a big layer that is changing everybody's life.
Yeah, it's in some respects, it's funny, as you said, with the tour having really come back so quickly and putting in such rigorous protocols, you almost in some respects become numb to it if you've been following it since that took place. More broadly speaking, though, how is the role, your role? You know, you talked about kind of how you got into this particular position, but running a tournament has really changed a lot in the past decade. I think back, you know, to some of my involvement with a variety of tournaments throughout my career. From your vantage point, how has your role changed in the last decade? Forgetting COVID for a second.
Yeah, when I interviewed for this job, I played it 9 times, so I was very familiar with the tournament. I was very familiar with the people that ran the tournament. I was involved on the board of the first team Monterey County, the Monterey Peninsula Foundation launched First Team Monterey County. So obviously there's a lot of connectivity and overlapping of people in both tournaments. So I when I was interviewed, I said that my predecessor, Ollie Nutt, did a fantastic job in this tournament and brought it into another layer of, you know, 100 million in giving. They surpassed that milestone under Ollie's leadership. I took over at a good time. And I just said in an interview, I think the tournament needs to constantly reinvent itself and better celebrities, not necessarily that we're bad celebrities, but just, I guess, changing celebrities, it's a bucket list and giving the opportunity to celebrities and athletes to play in this event. And but by having the same celebrities and athletes year after year, you know, we're dependent on ticket sales and we're dependent on TV ratings to keep the title sponsor happy. So you have to refresh a lot. And those are difficult conversations, but I think we have to constantly, you know, as I said, reinvent ourselves. So looking at the celebrities, I think that was an opportunity. And I took that on. And today we try to bring 3 and 4 new fresh faces a year while having those tough conversations with players that have played in the past and let them know, look, it was a bucket list for you. It's a bucket list for the next person. Let's give them a chance. And then same thing for the pros. I think that you have to offer the pros. You know, we're recruiting pros. Where we're different than a major is, you know, majors, they're all going to show up to a major. U.S. Open is the best. I mean, obviously Masters is there, but I think U.S. Open is our national championship. So they don't really recruit. The people just qualify and they play, and they all play. AT&T, I recruit. So I'm out recruiting year round and trying to, you know, build a case of why us versus the other 48 events. Well, we're Pebble Beach. So that's great. Everybody's. The reality is we have 3 beautiful golf courses. We've got a great community in Carmel. Pebble Beach Resorts, one of the best in the world, obviously. Number one, I think, is still does in public golf courses. But so we have to give them reasons to come to Pebble Beach. You know, events at night are great. The pros love to have events. You know, they're a traveling circus. They go from town to town. You want to give them something unique and different to bring them back the following year. So I spend a lot of time doing that, recruiting pros and recruiting celebrities. And then I also, I'm coming from the sponsorship standpoint, owning a dealership, I got hit every day for sponsoring something. I kind of know what they're thinking, what a sponsor thinks, you know, what they want, what's the return on investment, what's the return on value, what's the customer value. So I wanted to, you know, up that as well. And I think we are currently at the, we're at a benchmark for sponsor value as far as the experience they have on site. The structures we put out there are beautiful structures, very spacious, gorgeous, overlooking the most beautiful coast in the world, Pebble Beach, Monterey area. So those are the 3 areas I really focus on: is sponsor value, recruiting good pros, and getting the best celebrities and athletes. And it's tough because, you know, I'd love to have more women play in a tournament, but not a lot of them play golf, or they're fearful of hurting their brand, and they don't realize no one really cares what their score is. All they want to do is just say, hey, I saw that person. They don't care what they do. But I'm trying to get that message across to them as well. Just come and have a good time. Enjoy yourself. And at the end of the day, we're turning out a lot of money to charity. We're over $106 million to charity. I think it's the most in the PGA Tour. And they're part of that success, the celebrities and athletes and the sponsors and the players. So that's kind of what I spend my time doing. And until I don't love it anymore, or until the tournament, the board doesn't love me, then I'm going to continue to raise the bar every year.
You know, Steve, I really want to follow up on what you said about sponsorship. And it's something that we see all the time in terms of sponsorship efficacy, et cetera, the work that we do. You know, we all have heard about stories how a property can tell a CEO that they'll get a chance to play around with Jack Nicklaus or Bill Murray, and voila, you've sold yourself a premier sponsor. And even way before COVID, that changed, especially in the times where companies are really scrutinizing every dollar they spend on promotion and really measuring return on investment. What can properties offer in terms of increased value, how to measure it, and how to attract and maintain more sponsors in the medium and long term? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, as I said, I came from that background with car dealerships. The amateurs that play in our event are made up of celebrities, athletes, and CEOs. They're not CMOs, they're not CFOs, they're CEOs. So the CEO gets this invitation to become a sponsor, not just to play, but to become a sponsor of this event. And it's got a nice big number with a bunch of commas and zeros. And the CEO is thinking to himself, holy cow, I get to play Pebble Beach, Monterey, and Spyglass with a professional for a week. This is awesome. We're in. Well, then it goes down the food chain and hits the CFO. And the CFO is thinking, what are you, crazy? I'm going to spend how much? And then it gets to the CMO. The CMO says, are you nuts? This thing is this much? That's my budget for the year. Well, and the CEO will tell him, it's important to me. I want to support the charities of the Monterey Peninsula Foundation. And he said, we get that, but where's our return on investment? Well, it's going to be great. Don't worry about it. We can bring our customers to the site. We can treat them to spend and have great food at Pebble Beach from all the culinary areas of Pebble Beach and offerings. And then, you know, we'll get to we're going to mingle with pros, and maybe we'll pick up Dustin Johnson. We'll put, you know, ABC Plumbing on that Dustin Johnson's chest. So the CEO turns into a salesperson at that point. And it's fantastic. But without them, we have 56 secondary sponsors in addition to AT&T. All those 56 sponsors are putting up a significant amount of money. And of those 56, 30 or so are actually a playing spot, and that's where the CEO is going to play in that spot and have a great week. So they're trying to justify the spend to their organization. And some organizations don't have the bandwidth to absorb this kind of a spend. Others, you know, they spend this in a weekend. But it's interesting. So yeah, there has to be a return. So my job is justifying why they should spend X. Come to Pebble Beach. And by the way, you're going to play golf too. We can get by the golf part right away. But I've got to say, well, here's what you're going to do. You're going to have sponsor value that you've never seen. AT&T is really, and you know this from the PGA Tour, you've heard it from other people. On course, in camera view, the only thing in camera view is AT&T, PGA Tour, FedEx. That's it. Beyond that, it can't. So everybody wants to try to get their umbrella with, you know, ABC Plumbing on it on TV so they can say, look, we got on TV. Well, we can't do that. No tournaments can do that. If it happens, it's purely by mistake. We have to, you know, AT&T is the title for a reason, paying a lot of commas and a lot of zeros and a lot of dots and more zeros. So that's where we are, again, very fortunate, second longest running sponsor on the PGA Tour behind, I think, Honda. So we have to look at AT&T as it really, first and foremost, priorities to them, make sure they get the return on investment, and then every secondary sponsor. Sponsor value programs are really important to us. We try to add, this year, unlike none other, these secondary sponsors, with obviously AT&T left the entire sponsorship dollars, amazing. Secondary sponsors are falling in, and they are as well. So we're trying to give them a little sponsor value too. We're doing some, you know, maybe there's a virtual, they can do a virtual Q&A with a pro. We can set those up, things like that. So to return a little value to their contribution at this point is what it really is.
Really fascinating to see how you can maintain that, particularly in a year like this. And
yeah,
we're excited to see it. One of our favorite venues, obviously, is for everybody. And, you know, just think, if we sell a few more research projects, maybe we can be one of those secondary sponsors as well. I guess
we have an opening.
Steve, thanks so much for being on Drivers. We really appreciate it. Good luck with this year's event.
Thanks.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you for another episode of Drivers next time.